Welcome to the Making Money in Multifamily Show, where we discuss everything to do with multifamily real estate investing. We believe it's the best way to gain financial freedom and build lasting wealth. This is where you'll find the best information and practices to help you succeed in your real estate business, whether you're already experienced or just starting out. Here's your host, Dave Morja.
Hello, listener, and welcome to the show. I am your host, Dave Morja, and with me today is Tom Dunkel. Tom is the Chief Investment Officer for Belrose Storage Group. Belrose specializes in acquiring underperforming self-storage facilities in the Eastern U.S., and I was browsing their website. It truly is the entire Eastern U.S., all the way from New York down to Florida, so that's amazing. Tom personally has a background in corporate finance and 25 years of real estate investment experience. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave. Great to be here with you today and the listeners. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks again for joining. And I think we'll really just notch right into it real quickly here. Self-storage investing. You guys have an extensive commercial background experience in this. Looks like as the investment officer, we were talking before we hit record, but you're focused largely on kind of the acquisition side of the business, where we're looking to fund the deal and get it under contract and get that deal closed. So could you just kind of go into your background a little bit more and what you do at Belrose?
Yeah, sure, Dave. I'll kind of keep it short. I'm solidly in my 50s now, so I do have quite a bit of history. So I have a tendency to get long-winded. I'll try not to do that today. But yeah, I started out in corporate America. I was doing corporate finance stuff, mergers and acquisitions. Had a ton of fun with that. I was in the aerospace industry. So I worked with retired fighter jet pilots and Air Force colonels and Marines and actually a couple astronauts as well. So it was a really great environment to kind of build the foundation for me in corporate finance. But after heading through there and spent some time on the investment banking side, where I got blown up in the internet bubble. I was with a technology investment banking firm back then. So that was probably my first bubble experience. Was back there in the early 2000s. But then had always wanted to do something on my own. So when I got fired from my corporate job in 2006, I was like, okay, I've had enough of the enough of the corporate world. Let's go give it a run. And I'd always wanted to be in real estate, because I actually have a little bit of DNA in the real estate world. I have a great grandfather and also a grandfather who were builders and investors way back when. So my timing was probably pretty bad going into real estate 2006 as an entrepreneur, thinking like, hey, I've got this great background, I can't do anything wrong. And I learned over those next few years that there was a lot that could go wrong. So learned a lot of tough lessons there. Got the battle scars to show for that. But all of a sudden, that's about going on 17 years ago. And so I've just been out there battling in the real estate world for all that time. And in 2000, when I say we, my partner Joe Downs and I, we connected in 2010. We built a great business in the distressed mortgage debt business, which is still running today, called U.S. Mortgage Resolution. But it's a very volatile business. When it's good, it's like great. But when it's bad, it's like really bad. So we had been wanting to find an asset class within real estate that was going to be like on the other end of the spectrum, something that where it was we could preserve our capital, we could generate cash flow passively from the asset, but also had some growth potential. So we looked at some different things. We tried hard money lending, we tried fixing and flipping houses, we tried getting into multifamily. But when we found self-storage around about 2017, we were like, hey, we should really dig into this, because this could be kind of the asset class that we've been looking for. So 2018, we spent a lot of time getting educated. 2019, we joined a self-storage mastermind group. We assembled our team. Joe and I are really solid on the financial side of things, the underwriting, the raising the capital, but we weren't good at finding those off-market deals. that were, you know, that's really where you find your, you know, your best deals, right? You make your money when you buy. So we didn't have that skill set. So through our mastermind group, we brought in our partner, Tim Kane, and he's an expert at not only the lead generation side, but he's also very experienced on the development side. So that's helpful as well. And then finally, you know, I tell people all the time, it's easy to buy real estate, right? If you pay full price and pay close in cash tomorrow, you know, you're going to buy as much real estate as you can get your hands on. But then of course you've got to operate it. So that was the last piece of the puzzle we really needed. So we found Catherine East. She's an industry veteran in the self storage world, former executive director of the Missouri State Self-Storage Owners Association. She's audited and done management consulting on hundreds of facilities around the country. So she's now on our team, helping Tim on the operations side. So once we got that piece in place, then we were like, okay, we've got the team together. We've got the education. Let's go start buying facilities. So we started buying in 2020, and we're about to close on our 12th facility here in early 2023. So we've been growing not at an amazing clip. I know the other companies are growing faster, other companies are growing slower. But we're very disciplined with our acquisitions. As the market got a little crazy late last year with interest rates going up, but sellers still wanting the same price they got, you know, 6 or 12 months prior. You know, we had some deals that fell apart, but we're okay. Yeah, obviously it hurts a little because you're spending time and money and attorneys and inspections and all that stuff, but you know, we're happy to eat that cost so that we don't end up in a bad deal. But like I warned you, Dave, I get a little long-winded, so I'll take a breath now and hopefully gave you a little bit of background how we ended up in self-storage.
No, it's you perfectly captured it. And I got a couple questions. And just the first point, I think, is, you know, what was it? It sounds like average a deal a quarter. That I think is a very, you know, good pace. Personally, if I see a team, you know, that I was looking to invest in passively that is doing more than that, you know, that can be fine, but you're always at risk of operations going on the wayside because you're so busy on the acquisition side of the business. So, you know, I would say you're yeah, probably doing a good service to your investors in that regard. But I just wanted to rewind and highlight sure, more of the partnership side of it, because you said you had you and your initial partner, and then you basically brought in two other key strategic partners that filled in the two holes in your guys' mm-hmm, business. I think that you know, the absolute best approach to going into business, whether it's real estate, other, to kind of further a business. You can't really leverage talents if you're bringing on the same talents. So you mentioned it was a mastermind, right? That was for the first partner. Was that for both partners, or was that a different scenario there? Was it
Kevin? No, it was for both. Yeah.
Okay.
And just to take it another couple steps further, through our self-storage mastermind group, we've also found investors and partners. So we have, because our mastermind community has seen the team and the success that Belrose Storage Group has had, we actually have mastermind members coming to us now saying, hey, I've got this deal, but maybe they don't have the full team put together yet, or maybe they're just not quite sure about it, so they want to run it by us. So we've been fortunate and honored to have some folks reach out to us to want to partner with us.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, I'm in a couple of masterminds myself. They definitely get you further faster. You'll find, like, basically you guys did what I did. You'll find the quality people that you want to work with, whether it's, you know, on one deal or several, or if it's just on a passive basis, or just kind of find a people in the business you want to get along with. So if you're not in something that's like right, that, find something, whatever it is. I always recommend that. But just to get back to the acquisition side of things, you know, the one deal a quarter on average, you mentioned, you know, some going faster, some going slower. The last few years, what was really kind of the pace bottleneck as far as your guys' business? Was it the acquisition side, or were you finding off-market deals and it was really, you know, the funding or the operation side? What was it really that you guys were diligent about as far as scaling the business properly?
Yeah, good question. So I would say our bottleneck, unfortunately, it has been on the acquisition side. Fortunately, we've been able to finance all of the transactions that have come through the pipeline, and we haven't run across anything yet from an operational perspective we thought was I mean, we've certainly turned down deals that we've looked at because maybe it is a really heavy lift on the operation side. Maybe it's a really dilapidated, class D kind of facility that we didn't want to get tangled up with. But yeah, it's certainly been on the acquisition side. As I touched on earlier, we seem to be at a place in the market right now here in early 2023 where, there's a wide bid ask spread, right, between what the sellers are wanting because they heard what their friends sold for, 6 or 12 months earlier, and where the reality is with more expensive money right now and being a return driven organization. We need to definitely be careful that we're not overpaying. But acquisitions has been tough for sure. And as an internal process, it's a deal a quarter, like you pointed out, but we're obviously looking at way more than one deal a quarter. I think we figured recently that we're looking at 40 to 50 deals for every one that we close. So that's a lot of upfront lifting to just make sure that, we're closing on the best deals that we can find for our investors, because of course we're investors too. So we're eating our own cooking. So we're not bringing in a deal and bringing in investors just to, clip a fee. I mean, we make fee income, but our success is really determined by the success of the facility.
Yeah. I mean, there's the short-term thoughts, but really the long-term process is operating and building equity for, passive investors and the active partners is really where it's best yielded for everybody. I just wanted to kind of highlight, it is your niche to be, on the closing side of the business. You kind of mentioned today's environment, what sellers are really wanting. And there's also the flip side of that, what is the debt and what is the equity really looking for in deals? So can we just kind of highlight, what you're seeing in the lending market? What are your lending partners kind of looking at? And maybe eventually we'll get into what your investors are looking at on the equity side.
Sure. Yeah. The debt side has been very interesting recently. Yeah. So we've had a kind of the broad spectrum of experiences. So what I mean by that is we closed the deal up in New York State back in November 2022, and we got seller financing on that deal, right? So the owner had had it for a long period of time, had a ton of equity in it, didn't want to pay all the taxes up front. So he was happy to give us a good chunk of debt that was interest only at 5% for 5 years. So I mean, it was tough to beat those kind of terms. But then on the other end of the spectrum, we had a deal where we had a term sheet from a bank, and as folks probably know, a term sheet is not binding; it's just kind of an indication of where the bank is seeing the loan. And I might forget the numbers a little bit, but you'll get the idea. So the term sheet had a rate of, I think, like 5.5%, is a spread over, I think, the 10-year treasury or something. Well, when we got a little further down the line, and of course, along the way, the Fed is increasing interest rates and that sort of thing. So they came back around to us and said, oh yeah, that 5.5%, well, now it's 7%. So it put us in a kind of a tough position, right? Where our cost of money is going up. So that's going to hurt, all else being equal, that's going to hurt the returns on the equity side. So we kind of had to take a fresh look at our model and our projections. And what we were able to do was we were actually able to go back to the seller, and they were a little more reasonable. And we said, hey, I know we've been talking about paying you this, but as you've been reading in the newspapers, the interest rates have been going up, our cost of money is going up, we can't afford to pay that anymore, but we can pay you this. And so they actually agreed. We've had some deals where they said, no, I'm holding out for this number. And then unfortunately, we had to walk away. But in this particular scenario, they were agreeable to dropping the purchase price by about 5%. But that helped us for sure, just to make sure that our numbers still worked out for the seller and for our investors and for the bank. So It's definitely been a challenging time. We've found for our model, right? So we're value add buyers. So we buy facilities that are not being run correctly. Maybe they're moms and pops. We add value by bringing in our professional management team, leveraging technology, all that good stuff. So our turnaround time is really only maybe 2-3 years. We're not holding these facilities for a long time, which sounds great, but it does limit the lenders that are able to do that, because the life companies and some of the bigger CMBS kinds of institutional loans out there, they have very heavy prepayment penalties for like the first, 5 years or maybe even 10 years if it's like an SBA loan or something. So that really kind of limits the lenders that work with our strategy. So we've had best execution, Dave, on the small regional bank, small local regional banks, and also credit unions. They seem to not have that same hold period that they're shooting for. They're okay with a shorter time period. So loans are still getting done. We had a banker, we had a lender on a recent acquisition. They were offering to go up to 80% loan to value, but having come through the Great Recession, we were like, we'll stick with 75% loan to value, just to give it a little more cushion there.
It's good to have some margin for sure.
Yeah. So there's loans are still getting done. Pricing is dynamic. We're still happy to say that we are getting deals done and getting loans done.
Yeah. So, appreciate your insights on, getting into more of the regional banks and the, credit union side of the business, which aligns with your model. That makes a lot of sense. Talk about early prepayments and the yield maintenance. That could pretty much squash a lot of returns when you're looking to sell, shorter time frame, basically. You guys are, pretty spread out on the East Coast. So how does that work as far as partnerships go on the lending side? Do you have lenders that like, a diverse area across the U.S., or are they niche down? Or I'm sure it's a response of both, right? But could you just go into that a little bit further?
Sure. Well, the New York State deal, that was the seller financing deal. So that was pretty easy. We have a couple of facilities in Florida where we have the same lender. So they seem to like that market. But we have a facility in Georgia that we closed with a regional bank down there. And then we found another deal down the street, and we thought that they would be interested in closing on that one too. But they were one of the lenders that, they saw that the market was starting to shift, and they said, they didn't come right out and say no, Dave, but their term sheet pretty much said, we're not lending anymore, because it was, very high rate. They squished the amortization down to like 15 years. And so that was a tough term sheet. But they didn't come right out and say no. We pretty much just gleaned from the terms that they were offering that they really weren't in a lending frame of mind at that time. So it really varies from lender to lender. So we actually do a good amount of shopping around. We use a mortgage broker that has a, pretty big, Rolodex and wide range of lenders they work with. But then we also make a point to find some of those local banks proximate to the facility and, try to reach out to them directly, because a lot of times they prefer to lend in their own backyard kind of thing. So.
Yeah. And that was pretty much going to be my next question. You beat me to it, but the chicken or egg of, do you find the lenders in the market, or do you find the deal and then find the lenders? If you're doing it right, I think you got to do it both always, it's always a yes, not an or. It's tough out there, especially you guys are pretty spread out looking at a lot of different markets. It's definitely, I'm sure, you got to be pretty diligent when maintaining that list and those relationships. So.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, we're always needing to find, new lenders because we do change markets. So.
Yeah, of course. And then I guess, we could flip right to the equity side of the piece of that. We mentioned, pretty much how the market's slowing down for a lot of people. You're not the only firm that's really, not having the deal flow up to where they like it. But to flip that coin, you know, you have investors out there who want a good deal in their inbox so they can deploy some capital. They're looking at the stock market and saying, you know, seeing red every day on the S&P or what have you. So what is the theme? What is the sentiment from your investors at this point? You know, how excited are they? How fearful are they? What are you really seeing out there?
Yeah, great question. Yeah. So when we go to market and the investors that we've cultivated over time, you know, that we really, try to emphasize to them that self-storage is a great place to be in good times and in bad. And it's really, you know, they're looking for those three things, right? So investors are looking for, preservation of capital, right? They're looking for income and they're looking for growth. And if they're looking at some other asset classes, you know, they might be able to get one or two of those. But self-storage provides all three, right? It's real estate, so it's not going to zero, right? It has that capital preservation aspect. There's a business sitting on top of the real estate, so that's generating income. And self-storage has been very steady for over 40 years. The occupancy across self-storage facilities in the country has gently meandered between about 80 and 90% over the past 40 years. So it's a consistent generator of income. So we stress that. And then the growth aspects, right? So we're coming in and we're improving the financial aspects of the facility by using technology, you know, pushing the marketing, you know, pushing the rates, et cetera, so we can generate that higher net operating income, which is going to improve, increase the value of the facility. So we're really pushing our investors to kind of come around to that way of thinking. But we're also letting them know, like, hey, you know, the world's changing a little bit. We definitely had the wind at our backs the past few years, you know, so don't get used to that. But heading into a lot of folks are saying that we're going to be having a recession here. You know, self-storage is a great place to be because of what we just talked about. It's hard asset with a cash flowing business running on top. And so we're trying to temper expectations like, hey, you know, I know we were, you know, on that prior deal we did, we were cash flowing way up here, but, you know, really we're kind of getting back to reality and, you know, the normal seasonality of a self-storage facility. Whereas, you know, during COVID, we just, you know, blew through all this the seasonality because the demand was so high. But we're definitely trying to educate investors and temper their expectations that we're, you know, it's going to be harder to push rates going into a recession. But people need storage in bad times, just like in good times when they're buying lots of toys and stuff and they need a place to store them. In bad times, people are, you know, they're losing jobs and they're consolidating houses or they're moving houses. They're, you know, baby boomers are still, you know, going from their big houses and they're downsizing smaller houses, but they don't want to get rid of their stuff. So they store it. And so all those kind of disruptive things that can happen to people, you know, gives them a reason to need storage. So we love the space where we are and we're happy to be able to deliver still solid returns to our investors, even though the environment's a little tough out there right now.
Yeah. And it goes to the whole mantra of under promise, over deliver, right? Which sounds like you guys are setting good expectations. Not only 100%. Should you be setting them ethically anyways, but the SEC will probably come knocking on your door if you're kind of over promising returns for deals. So good to be, you know, setting realistic goals for the deal or just the practice in general. But on that over deliver front, you know, we kind of talked about it briefly before we did hit record, and I don't want to grill you too hard because, you know, you're not the CIO, but, you know, you mentioned a couple times the operations of the business. You guys are, you know, at a pretty good scale to do some value add plays on these property, which is, you know, a great way to add equity into the deal. So what are some of those, you know, key systems that you put in place, whether it's technology, like you mentioned, or just revenue generators that you put into these properties?
Yeah, sure. So the facilities that we acquire, Dave, like I mentioned, are mom and pop facilities. So what that means is, you know, they moms and pops, right? They if you think of, if you put yourself in their shoes, like they don't want to run a marketing program. They just want to keep their units full so that they can, you know, do whatever they do with the rest of their lives. They don't want to have to deal with turnover and that sort of thing. So they keep their rates artificially low. And the other thing that where they're really bad is delinquencies, you know, so, you know, they know, oh, well, you know, Sally's my neighbor, or, you know, George, our kids go to school together. So I'm not going to hassle him for his, you know, 3 month late bill. But anyway, so we come in and we run it like a business. So we do implement technology. We have a great management platform that runs our search engine optimization, and we can run all kinds of reports to see how we're doing with delinquencies and move-ins and move-outs. And then we also do a very detailed market survey. So we're looking at the competitors. Are they full? What rates are they charging? What are the rate trends? Are they going up? Are they going down? You know, all those kinds of things. But these days, especially during COVID, right, Dave, people just, they wanted to be able to do everything on their smartphone. And so at our facilities, if someone's driving by and they say, hey, you know, I'm going to rent a unit there, we use what's called a hybrid management strategy. So we don't have someone sitting on site 24/7 or, you know, during normal business hours, whatever it is, all the time. We have a manager that's assigned to that facility, and they are boots on the ground there probably a few days a month. But aside from that, they act as the call center. So the phone number at the facility goes to their cell phone, so they're able to answer it from wherever they are. And if that customer does drive up to the facility and the manager's not there in the office, there's a QR code on the gate. And so they can scan the QR code with their smartphone. They can fill out their paperwork sitting in their car right there and, you know, sign it with their finger, enter in their credit card information. They'll get a text message with the gate code. So they'll go in, they'll punch in their gate code, gate will open up, they'll be directed to their unit. They roll up the door in their unit, there's a lock waiting for them inside. And they unload their stuff into the unit, close it up, lock it, and they're on their way without having to interact with a manager face-to-face. One of the other cool technologies that we use, I don't know if you've heard of these security cameras, they're called Blink cameras, but it's a camera, security camera. It's very low profile. It's solar powered. It's wireless. It's connected to the Wi-Fi system at the facility. And so we use it for not only security camera. So like if we see someone on the property at night, the manager will get a ding on their phone and they'll be able to like basically yell at the person through the Blink camera, like, hey, I see you. You're not supposed to be on the property. You know, if you're not gone in 30 seconds, we're calling the cops kind of thing. But then they can also use that technology to help a customer. Like if they can't find their unit or they have a question about renting another unit, they can actually talk to the manager through the Blink camera. So it's pretty, pretty cool technology.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, we're talking reducing expenses here, essentially on that point of the conversation, right? Limiting the labor hours, you know, you talk about only a few days a month that a person has to be on site, using technology to basically replace those physical man hours on site. That's like a huge, huge income driver once you get to the bottom line. Really boosts the NOI, obviously the value of the property. So that's pretty awesome. And honestly, just from a personal perspective, you know, I don't have my own kind of storage unit anywhere, but I've helped friends move, whatever, what have you. You kind of just want to get in and out. You don't really want to deal with anyone else. You just want to, you know, go grab your stuff, go get it out, go drop some stuff off, kind of move on with your day. So whatever tech you can stack to make it more seamless for everybody usually is a fair trade for both sides of the parties. But then on the flip side, you know, you mentioned kind of this market valuation that you guys continue to do to assess the market. I think that's a big delta where it sounds like you guys do pretty well compared to mom and pops who maybe just kind of sit on the sidelines as far as the effort of that goes. They just kind of keep the rates where they're at, a little more static, whereas you know, they may be kind of losing some market capture there. So could you just go into that for a few more minutes and explain your process?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a huge driver, especially during COVID, right? I mean, demand for storage was going through the roof, right? But these moms and pops that are asleep at the wheel and not paying attention to what's going on in the market, or maybe they know what's going on in the market, but they're just not doing anything about it. You know, a couple of years goes by and all of a sudden they're 20%, 30% below market. And they don't realize it, or they don't know how to act on that information. But sure enough, we do. And so, here's an example of Granite City Storage in Mount Airy, North Carolina. We acquired the facility in January of 2021, as COVID was kind of heating up. And then, but what we did before we acquired that facility was we did our in-depth analysis, and we saw that there was, sure, there's a competitor right down the road, but when we did our analysis, they were full. And then the other competitor down the other side of the town, you know, they were full. And we looked at all the facilities around there and said, hey, these are all full. So if we raise our rates on our customers at Granite City Storage, they have a decision to make because they can't move to another facility. They're all full. So either they accept the increase, or they got to move their stuff out and find some other place for it, either at their home or, I don't know, buy a shed and put it in their backyard. I don't even know. So it gives us the ability to really work that demand, that supply demand curve, right? And so that we use that same kind of model, Dave, in every facility that we acquire. We're looking for, you know, where is that supply and demand equilibrium, and what kind of increase in rent can the customers kind of handle before, you know, having to find some alternative solution for their storage problem.
And I think you mentioned the mom and pop owner, whether it's ignorance or whether it's an active decision to not kind of raise the rents, it oftentimes can be a blend of both, right? You know, they could see the market maybe being a couple hundred bucks higher next door, but to them it means more work, right? They have to, you know, increase the rents, but then you could see potentially a little more turnover, kind of like you're alluding to. Which to them is kind of just not appetizing, and that's fine. But if you have a good operations, like it sounds like you guys do, you can handle that, you know, pretty fluidly generally. So, that's something to keep in mind as well with these mom and pop owners.
Sure. Yeah. We're not afraid of turnover. I mean, let's face it, self-storage, it's a metal box with concrete floors and roll up doors, right? So it's, you know, in multifamily, when someone moves out, right, you got to repaint, you know, maybe you're, you know, going to put in tile instead of carpet, you're going to swap out the Formica for granite, you're going to upgrade the lighting package, you know, trying to get that higher rent. And that can take a lot of money and a lot of time. Self-storage, you know, we're basically broom sweeping, you know, out of, you know, more or less a little garage. And, you know, maybe the door needs some grease or something so it works a little better. The latch needs to be replaced or greased so it works a little better. But a lot of times if a customer moves out in the morning, we can have it swept up on the website and leased out later that same day.
Yeah. And you know, that delta, really that difference you guys versus mom and pop may just be the marketing piece of it, right? If you have good marketing, you can fill that ASAP versus a mom and pop who is doing whatever guerrilla marketing campaign they've known since the last couple of decades, you know, that maybe not be as effective.
Right.
So
that's right. So yellow pages.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have kept up maybe well today, Tom, but I do want to hit these five key questions before we do run out of time. So as long as you're ready. The first one here, if you can only pick one trait that explains your success, what is that trait and why?
That's a tough one, Dave. I will point out to you over my shoulder here, we have our core values here at Belrose Storage Group. And I won't read them off to you, but there is one in there I think describes me pretty well, which is grit. Having been through the internet bubble and, you know, getting laid off from my job when, you know, I've got a first kid on the way, and then, you know, getting fired from my corporate job when I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old at home, and, you know, just kind of having to grind through all of those different scenarios, I think has really helped me to just, you know, stay after it. And, you know, even though things are bad sometimes, I know it's not going to last. And when things are really good, I know that's not going to last either. So I think, you know, being gritty and being even keeled, I would say, are the keys that I've had to success so far.
Yeah. And those battle scars, those seminars are certainly lessons you don't forget too quickly either. So that helps for sure.
That's right.
And then what is the most uncharacteristic thing you have done in your business, and why did you do it?
So I'd say in our distressed mortgage debt business, we raised money. We had funds during that time. And as I mentioned earlier, distressed debt can be, you know, really great when things are good. And then, but things can also, you know, dry up pretty quickly in that business. So we had a fund that wasn't performing very well. And we got to the end and we were able to liquidate it. But we were only able to give our investors back, we missed the return target. They still got a little bit of a profit, but that was in this particular fund that had a little different characteristic from this fund over here, which did really, really well. And my partner Joe and I, we did really well, as well. So we actually decided that we were going to take some of our personal profits and we were going to pay the investors from the fund that underperformed, because we just felt it was the right thing to do, to kind of help those investors out. Cause we felt bad that the market went against us. And even though we, worked our butts off and still were able to, not only return capital, but a couple extra bucks, we felt bad because we had done well over on this fund and not well. So anyway, I think it was very uncharacteristic. I don't know that any other, deal sponsors would do this, but we did come out of our own pockets to pay those investors, some more money that we thought was, maybe a little more fair.
Yeah. I've heard on deals go south where the sponsor will step up like that. I think, A, that's a great thing to do, but B, it'll probably get that investor to trust you for life because, if a deal goes south and you're going to step up, they feel pretty good going to sleep knowing that the downside is minimized quite a bit. So, that's amazing.
That's right.
Great on you guys. The next one here, can you name a time where you felt like you were not going to end up successful and how did you overcome that fear?
Yeah, well, certainly, when I was, young and full of hope, leaving corporate America with a nice stash of cash to start my entrepreneurial, real estate mogulship, I was very confident going into that. But then, of course, the next few years, all of a sudden I'm in a leadership position that I was not prepared for. I was not getting the right team members together. I was in a super competitive space. And so, just got crushed those next few years. And I was like, geez, where do I go from here? It didn't seem like long ago I was, kind of the golden boy in this corporate environment with these, great mentors and stuff. My career was on a really nice trajectory. And so having then, burned through all that cash, young family at home, it was definitely a kind of a gut check kind of time. But I knew I didn't want to go back to corporate America. And go back to the first question. I think I just, had to grind through and just maintain that grit and that perseverance. And that's how I was able to overcome that.
Yeah. And that's something, how you measure your performance as an entrepreneur is so much tougher than, like you mentioned, in corporate America to measure sometimes, especially earlier on in the entrepreneur life. There's a lot of doubts and, maybe it's one transaction away that gets you feeling better or something like that. But yeah, it's much easier to get a performance review at work and then, oh, I'm doing great. My boss likes me, call it a day, but it's much tougher to judge yourself. So
that's right.
But then a flip to that one, Tom, pretty much, can you name a time where something in your business went perfectly and what did you do to make that a reality?
Yeah, I have to say, I'm happy to say it's happened a couple of times in my career. But as it relates to storage recently, I'd have to say the deal that I was mentioning earlier, the Granite City Storage in Mount Airy, North Carolina. I mean, I feel like we bought that facility right. We really got down in the details on our underwriting. We knew what was going on in the market. So when we acquired the facility, we knew what we were going to be able to do with rates. The facility was just running great. We got a great manager in place there. We really leveraged technology. We were actually able to get the operating expense ratio for Granite City Storage down to about 18%.
Wow.
So what I mean by that, so you know, $100 comes in, $18 goes to running the facility, right? So we have $82 left over to pay our debt service and pay our investors. So our investors were super happy. And then on the out sale, we were able to we were able to create an auction environment. We had multiple bidders for the facility, and we were able to exit it exactly at the price that we promised our investors. Of course, this was after 18 months. That was our price target in year five. But again, we had talked about how this, you know, the wind was really at our backs, and we, cap rate compression helped us a little bit. But when you dissect the increase in equity there, it was really driven by our operations. And because we were able to take the net operating income from that facility from $200,000 a year to $300,000 a year in 18 months. So that just really helped us to crank up the value there.
Yeah, to show that, you know, T12, T3, whatever the trailing data is to the buyer. Give them the confidence to buy it, to produce at that level, certainly helps the valuation like quite a bit. So not even just the cash flow that you guys got, but the valuation on the exit, because you guys operate it so well, you know, the buyer's ready to take it over right then. So that's great. One here, Tom, what have you been focusing on lately to improve yourself or your business?
Sure. Great question. We hired a business coach a little over a year ago in early 2021. And so he's really helping us to build Belrose Storage Group to be a kind of a self-sustaining business. So, you know, forget about storage or whatever. You know, we're trying to build a business that has the right systems in place and the right people in place so that myself and my partners, Joe and Tim, you know, we can be more on the board of advisors, you know, board of directors kind of role. And not in the, you know, kind of the day-to-day craziness of, you know, trying to find a deal and vet the deal and raise the money and get it closed. You know, we're trying to, you know, lift ourselves out of that. So again, kind of pointing over my shoulder here, you can see not only do we have our core values there, which is really the DNA in our company, and we use that to filter for team members as we're hiring them. And we also use that as metrics to measure current team members by, and so we take a we do take a concerted effort to recognize team members who are demonstrating our core values, and we give them, you know, shout outs for that. But also up here, as you'll see, our company purpose. So it's our vision. So we're putting our vision together for what we want to look like in 3 years, and then the circular one you see here, that's our flywheel. So those are the half dozen things that we need to focus on every day as a business, that those are the key things that help our business grow. And so we have all of our team members focused on those various items and accountable for those various items, so we can create that momentum and grow the business so that, you know, Tim, Tom, and Joe can, you know, spend a little more free time doing, you know, the things that we like to do outside of work. So those are the kind of the key things that we're working on as a business, is, you know, building those systems, processes, and the team so it can be a self-sustaining business.
Yeah, and it sounds, you know, from my lens, that it's paying off, seeing your guys' growth over the last few years, what you guys plan to do the next couple. Exciting stuff, Tom. Just in case a listener wanted to reach out, talk to you about investment self-storage, you know, just get to learn more about your business, how could they reach you today?
Sure, absolutely. Dave, this has been great, buddy. Thank you so much. Good talk today. So I'm Tom Dunkel. I'm the Chief Investment Officer at Belrose Storage Group, and you can find us at belrosestoragegroup.com. We also post a lot of cool stuff on Facebook, on our Belrose Storage Group Facebook page. And through those channels, you're able to also register our investor portal if you're interested in looking at our self-storage opportunities. But all those locations have my contact information on them. So you can feel free to, you know, call me or email me, and love to talk to you about self-storage.
Tom, love the chat. Thanks for keeping up with me today. I think I kept you on your toes, so appreciate you sticking with it.
Yeah, thanks again. Great questions. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the show. I don't take your time and attention for granted and appreciate that you would spend it with me. If you enjoyed this show or any of my previous shows, it would be a huge help if you would rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcasting service, or even just share the episode with a friend. And if you'd like help from me or would like to talk about real estate investing further, feel free to visit the show notes for more information, or you can visit davidtravis.com.